Welcome to
Man's Book Club.
Man's Book Club, brought to you by another Western, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, man, we're a lot of Westerns. Yeah, we're just well, it's kind of interesting because we read the fictional version. This is the nonfiction.
Isn't it funny that the nonfiction seems more like fiction, and the fiction seems more like nonfiction?
Yeah.
That's exactly what we've read in the past. Killers of the Flower Moon by David Gran. That's it. That's the silence between Matt and I is exactly what we thought of this book. That's about it. The story is apparently a famous story that I had no idea about.
Yeah, I feel like nobody knew anything about it. And then that movie came out.
Right.
The same name.
Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. 3 hours or 3.5. That came out.
Mm-hmm.
Then this book seemed to resurface
because of that, right?
Because of that. And I, like you, never
heard of the story.
Never heard of it.
We good?
Yeah, we're good.
Oh, okay. You were fiddling around. I thought, no, we lost connection.
No, we did.
Our millions of fans. And Margaret Atwood. Okay, so this is a story that's set in the 1920s. I say story like it's fiction, and it really sounds like it's fiction. But it's basically about this Osage Nation in Oklahoma that has basically struck oil. And since they struck oil, they became some of the wealthiest people in the country. They actually mentioned in the book that they were the richest per capita area in all of America.
Yeah, which is kind of fascinating.
It's crazy. And while that's happening, there's these random, which at first seem like random murders of people within their tribes. Little by little, people within the Osage tribe die more and more until people start to take notice. And one of those people is Texas Ranger named Tom White.
And there are all these Texas Rangers.
I want to be a Texas Ranger when I grow up. Texas, who got hired, funny enough, by J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI director, before the FBI was even a thing, when the FBI became a thing.
I think it was something else, right? It was like...
Yeah.
I don't know what it was called.
Basically, the entire thing was supposed to be like a swept under the rug, which is probably why we've never heard of it. Like, they probably did such a good job. But it really follows the story. They centralize it around this woman named Molly Burkhart, who is this Indian woman from the Osage tribe in Oklahoma, who basically starts to lose people that are close to her. First, her sister goes missing, and they find that she's pushed down a bank off a mountain and died.
They died all horrible
death. They all died horrible death. There's a family friend who gets who has a bullet in him while he's in a car. There are all these people surrounding her.
Didn't her like sister get blown up?
Yeah.
Or fire?
Fire. Yeah. Their house blows up. I mean, it's all foul play death. Now, what makes this very interesting is that in the beginning, even though there's maybe a little bit of a, oh man, there's no real good investigation done, you know, like where there's supposed to be people collecting evidence, people are walking all over them, they're kind of like not chasing.
Yeah, they're not really respected, they're Indians and that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, the way that the U.S. government has screwed over the Indians is a whole section of this.
I think my favorite part was they wanted to screw them over so badly, they made them move different location to this area that was hilly, that you couldn't probably grow food. Right. And it turned out it was full of oil. So
that's actually very interesting. So we find out that all of these Indians were living in an area where the U.S. government wanted the resources that they were on. So they kept pushing them and pushing them to this area in Oklahoma,
which turned out to be the richest area.
Right. But nobody knew, obviously, at the time. And the Indians didn't even want to live there. So, like, no one wanted to be there. It was just this uninhabited, almost desert with barely any civilization in it. And they end up getting pushed there, and just so happens that they strike oil in that area, and it becomes this, like, wealthiest area in all of America. And, of course, once they find that out, the white people want it back.
Yeah. So, and there's all these rules of you know, you had to get married to somebody that was white so right. they could.
Yeah. So as an Indian.
Use your money, I guess.
As an Indian who has a lot of money, as a Native American who has a lot of money, you can't access that money without a guardian of some sort who happens to just be white. And, oh, by the way, most of these Indian people end up marrying American people, American white American people. I'm going to be very strange. I'm not trying to get canceled here. White American people, because they, those, some of them end up being shady motherfuckers, which we'll get into in a second. And just some of them end up moving to that area because that's where all the work is because of the export of the oil that's actually happening. It makes a huge part of this economy. It's really all about like oil. And everybody wants it. It's almost like this oil boom that happened in the early 1920s, which really drives a big part of this story.
Which you're thinking it usually happens like somewhere else, but mm-hmm. like Texas or something, but.
Yeah. And like there's a, like Molly, who's the main person, ends up marrying a white guy.
Who's like involved with, who's shady, who mm-hmm. she divorces, right? Because his uncle might be, wasn't he the main guy?
Yeah. Yeah. So the main bad guy in all of this, or at least so we think, but for the most of this, we don't even find out until the end, is this man named Hale.
Yeah.
Or Hal. Hale, I think.
I think Hale.
Because it's E. Who is basically seen initially in the first part of the story as like this honorary mayor of the town. He's a white guy, but he has done so much for the community. He lets people borrow money. He employs American Native Americans in there. He basically does everything he possibly can to help the community. He's seen as almost like a pillar of a community. He is such a good guy.
Well, you know, after you kill somebody for their inheritance.
Right. But in the beginning, nobody knows that. And he is first on the scene. And it really doesn't start to get into people's head that he might be a bad guy until they start connecting all of these other bad guys back to Hale, who is, you know, he paid one person to kill a person and push him off the train. He paid another person to blow up the house. He paid another person to say that he was in one place when he wasn't. He paid another person. And it's not until this Texas Ranger, Tom White, begins to sort of do these investigations and travel to these distances and talk to all these people and basically start the whole investigation process from scratch, do we find out that all of these things are happening because he's trying to tie loose ends that just didn't end up making sense. Like, there was a man who was on the train who was making his way up to D.C. or Maryland to basically explain what happened, and he dies along the way, and nobody really questions it. They say, oh, it's just another accidental death. There's this death that happens in another town nearby in a saloon where nobody questions it, and they say it's an accidental death. And there is all these people who are dying from a sickness randomly who just happen to be people of the Osage tribe, and nobody's questioning, like, oh man, they're getting sick. And then he's like, wait a minute, how are they getting sick? They're 32 years old, they're in good shape, and they get sick and die overnight. And they start looking into all of this. There's poisoning, there is hitmen, there are killers out there, and it's not until there is like an organized, clear investigation that they start to put all these pieces together. And every single one of them, like, one would go to a guy named Black Tie, and Black Tie would tell them that it was part of this payment that he got from this other guy, and this other guy ends up leading them to Hale, who is this, again, this good doer who is, hey, I'll put up money to help the community while we're fighting this investigation and all this stuff. And he ends up being the piece of shit most of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. And honestly, like, it's a real story, and it's written by an investigative journalist, David Grain. Like, he's basically, his entire career is just investigating these stories. But what's more is he's writing it in a way where it actually seems like a fictional story.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
He's writing it mainly from the main viewpoint of Molly Burkhart, who's, like we said, like people of her family. She's one of the main people where people around her family start kind of dying off one after the other, and it doesn't really make sense. Yeah, I think it's
like the mother at first, it might be.
The sister, the in-laws, like basically everybody starts to die little by little. And her husband is in on it, by the way.
Yeah, which is even worse.
Yeah, all along her husband, and she ends up kind of leaving him, and he goes to jail, and he turns on Hale, so.
Well, I think the worst part was, I think her family and the her and the kids are supposed to be in the house with the fire. So he was cold-blooded. Mm-hmm. He would have killed. Right. He didn't care.
Yeah. But what I actually think one of the most interesting thing is the granddaughter of all these years later. I mean, this is the granddaughter of Molly, who is in the center of this, basically ends up meeting with David Gran, who basically is, I don't want to say still investigating it, but still has a lot of open questions. Yeah, he goes back to the area to try to get like some unanswered questions. By the way, the Texas Ranger himself ends up taking a job at a local jail. You know, he feels like he's done his job, even though there are some questions still lingering in the back of his mind. But David Grant goes back after all these years and talks to Molly's granddaughter. And even though her granddaughter is noticing that there's a lot of things that are still iffy, she's reached this point where, like, she's accepted that the white people have screwed her family, and she's trying to move past it a little bit. But I keep going back to, like, yes, it's a horrible, horrible story. And honestly, like, talking about it doesn't do it justice because there's so many pieces. Like, we would be sitting here making a family tree of all of these characters because everybody's tied to everybody in all these different events. But for me, the most interesting part of this story, in a sad way, is how far the government tried to go to take away from the Native Americans at that time. I mean, the lengths that they would do, like, you had to be a certain color or a certain race to be able to get money.
Then you have to go to, like, a certain school.
Right. You had to go to a certain school.
Which I've known about. I knew that part. You know, I don't know, maybe not this tribe. But
look, we always hear that Americans have screwed over the Native Americans. Like, the white Americans have screwed over the Native Americans. We hear that all the time. It's like, yes, we hear it constantly and consistently, but until you kind of like see it in this sense where, like, oh, okay, once they do find success, the lengths that we will go to, like, murder these people, and I don't want to say we because I'm not part of this, but the length that an American that came over later on in life, a white American, would go to, like, murder Native Americans just for money, even though they've been screwed out of land, they've been screwed out of equal treatment, and you see it actually happening to them in a story like this. And it really wasn't until, like, a random Texas Ranger decides to take up the case that, like, all these people would get justice. Otherwise, we wouldn't even know about
this. Yeah, if that guy didn't decide to do it, there's nobody else that was going to do
anything.
I mean, maybe later on, but not for this
story. And most of that stuff would have been gone in the history books. I mean, he even mentions, like, when he goes back to look a lot of this stuff, it's either been destroyed or burnt, or somebody's had access to it that he no longer can find. I mean, you know, it's the 1920s. You can't just go online and Google this stuff. So, yeah, had it not been for Texas Ranger, who decided to put these pieces and act like an investigator, you know, and they mentioned it in the book, there was a lot of resistance from DC to be able to, like, treat these people equally and give them what they're supposed to and give them the funds to be able to actually open up an investigation. It's just
we see it a lot too. I mean, not just with them, but, you know, even with segregation, like, DC sort of act
right
in a lot of those stuff, so it probably takes years for change. And
yeah. Yeah, and look, let's be honest. If the U.S. government could have gotten away with taking over that piece of plot of Oklahoma.
Oh, they probably would have.
They probably would have.
They probably would
have. It's insane.
You know, it's kind of like any company where, even like baseball, they hid steroids for a long time.
Yeah.
It's the same type of thing. If they could, or NFL, CTE, mm-hmm. you can hide it.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to.
Right. And then when it comes to light, all of a sudden, what are you talking about?
No, we're great. We give them health care. Yeah.
We pay retirements, don't we? Right, guys? I think we do, right? it's a crazy story. And there are two parts of this entire book, which, by the way, is one of the fastest nonfiction books that you'll ever read.
Yeah, and it's not... it's fast. It's not too long either. Yeah, in general.
It's almost like 250 pages. It's not that bad.
They have pictures on half the pages.
There are a lot of pictures. You could probably get through this in like 2 or 3 days. There are two things in this story. There's the part of the story that's actually keeping you in suspense, which is like the murder and who did it.
And it's like very interesting too, because like Hale, even though you know like pretty much after a while he did it, he bribes his way out
of the jury pool. He buys the right people. He buys the right sheriffs. He bribes the right people. Yeah, he bribes a lot of people. And then there's another part of the story that is actually a historical prevalence to what the white Americans did to the Native Americans in the 1920s, by the way. We're not talking when they came here in 1492, and we're not talking about the 1800s. We're talking about 100 years ago. And it's insane to be able to see that in a way that was honestly would have been just pushed under the rug. And look, how long have we read about a lot of history? I mean, have you ever been taught about these people in school? Like,
no.
We read about so much history, and it's just like the Roaring Twenties.
No. what you end up hearing in school is you get this, you're in third grade or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're made to believe, like, we did the right thing. We kept these people down.
We
prevailed.
And look, like every group of people, I'm sure there are good and there are bad.
Yeah, of course.
Like there are the more violent ones
saw, unfortunately, the white people in this case, most of them, they saw an opportunity.
Right.
And they took it because they knew, hey, well, they need us.
Absolutely.
To spend their money.
Absolutely, yeah.
So,
and the government, full of white people, backed that up. And
yeah, exactly.
But a white person ended up helping all of those Indians.
Yeah, exactly.
Whose
exactly.
last name just happens to be White.
Yeah.
And he's the reason that this story came to light. And
well, yeah, you always need. Yeah, you needed somebody to.
He's a hard renegade. That's what he is.
Well, he's a Texas Ranger.
Which
is actually kind of interesting. A Texas Ranger would do that, because you have to figure, as a Texas Ranger, he would have some bad connotation with mm-hmm. Indians at some point.
Yeah,
not these particular ones. But
yeah, or he's like, I mean, that's like saying, like, because you are a white person in the 1950s, you hated black people. I'm sure a good percentage of white people in the 50s were racist, but I think there is a huge group of people who probably were looked at it as a disgusting thing. And it's kind of the same thing. I mean, like I said, there are good white people and bad white people. There are good Indians and bad Indians. And that, for me, is, I think, we need to, for whatever reason, this story is not told. And it's such a crazy story. It's such a crazy story to be the richest. I didn't even, like, that's a fact that we should know, right? Should we not have known that there is an area in Oklahoma that was the richest per capita?
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, is when you're growing up, we don't need to add this because we don't want you to know.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Like in history class.
Especially if you're from, where was this, Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Especially from there. Yeah. We want to be the good guys.
Well, yeah. Like, we learn about World War II and then the stock crash. And it's like at somewhere in that gap, we should have learned about this. It's an interesting story. It's a very fascinating one. I haven't watched the movie, but I heard the movie was supposed to be very good. It's very long.
I just watched Oppenheimer, which is 3 hours. And I think this one's like 3.5.
Oh, wow.
Or something like that. And, you know, I'll just read the book.
Yeah. It's It's honestly, I feel like you could probably read the book faster than you can watch the movie.
No, you definitely, you definitely
100%.
You definitely can. Or at the same time, at least.
Look, I don't know if we need to really rate nonfictions, but it's.
I mean, it's a good read.
It's a great read. It's honestly one of like, it's a story everybody should know.
Yeah, it's a story everybody should know. It also captures your just attention because mm-hmm. just the craziness yeah. that.
And let's not discount that this guy does an amazing job at writing it, because he writes it like it's a drama novel, like it's a thriller. He writes it with, he leaves cliffhangers at the end of chapters. He kind of explains to you things from the point of view of the people that are there. He really leaves you in suspense. One of the reasons why it's such a fast read is that it doesn't feel dry. It's not facts thrown at you. It's a story about a town, and it's not really all that different from like a Lonesome Dove sort of story, where like there's an event happening in this town, and you're also getting it. Like I said, it feels like this is a fiction work, and Lonesome Dove was nonfiction.
And one of the saddest parts is like now you go to that town and those machines are still pumping, but mm-hmm. it's barely any oil left. Right. I mean, now they might have casinos there and some other stuff, but
yeah, it's a great book. I really highly recommend it. Killers of the Flower Moon by
It's a great David title. Grant.
Yeah, do you know what the title is about?
No.
So, there are flowers that in the month of May end up dying, and let me just see if I get this. Yeah, they're talking about a specific month where all of the flowers end up dying.
Mm.
And at that time is basically when like they call that time Killers of the Flower Moon, because the moon is the highest in the sky. Okay. And that's the time when all of the flowers end up dying. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of massive articles about that story, about the flower moon. But anyway, a great story. Tell your kids about it. Don't be assholes. Yeah,
Tell your kids about it.
David Grann, The Killers of the Flower Moon. Give it a read. Thank you guys for listening. See ya.
See ya.